We're back with another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at the Federalist. As always, you can email the show at radio@thefederalist.com. Follow us on Twitter at FDRLST. Make sure to subscribe wherever you download your podcasts as well. Today, I'm joined by my colleague, Christopher Bedford, senior editor at the Federalist, also a co-founder over at RightForge. Chris, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
Now, we're here on a somber note to discuss the tragedy that unfolded in Texas this week, and details are changing on a minute-by-minute basis at this point. Some information has turned out to be bad information. Some information that has emerged recently, we don't know yet whether it's good or bad. But Chris, you were on Fox News this morning and made a point that I thought was very much worth discussing. You said, this is starting to look more like a Columbine than a Parkland, and you have good reasons for saying so. Tell us more about what you mean.
So, I mean, there are obvious similarities with Parkland, with a failure of security and this and that, or a deranged kid from a broken family, grandmother, sort of things like that. But what brings me back to Columbine is I remember hearing about that. I was in probably sixth or seventh grade playing playing on with my toys on the floor, and I had my local rock station on the radio. And it suddenly broke. And these hosts didn't know how to talk about it. This was the first massacre we'd seen in a school in the United States since, I think, the Texas Tower shooting years and years and years before at the university. And, of course, you'd seen gang violence and things like that, but nothing in decades quite like this. And people didn't even know how to quite compute it. But more to the point that I was kind of reminded of is that the police didn't know how to react. Mm. They were used to hostage situations. They were used to, if there's an active shooter, you cordon the area off so he can't get away.
Right.
They weren't used to people not trying to get away.
Right.
And you try to negotiate. You try to get contact with them. What's going on in there? What kind of thing? We hadn't been confronted in the local police level with that kind of evil. And it's very rare to be confronted with that at such a mass scale. And I've been thinking about that with this. What happened in Texas and how the police lines, we don't know over this 40 minutes or an hour and a half. Mm. The timeline keeps on changing. But these videos are coming out through this heart-wrenching of parents fighting to get through these lines and the police stopping them. Mm. And it's not like they're just heartless bureaucrats. There's something that broke down in order. I mean, these police officers lost children in this school. But when you're surrounding this place and waiting for tactical gear, and you know that there's children who are inside, and you hear shot after shot, and you know you're going to get... I cannot possibly understand what kind of breakdown. And I know that minds break down. I know that people freeze. I know that it's easy to sit in a chair and be like, well, I would do this. Mm-hmm. But I can't imagine how men and women who have children in that school or part of that community who know what this evil is, because it's happened so many times now, wouldn't go in there. If you've got a dozen or two dozen people with guns who know how to shoot, and there's an active shooter, or there's six active shooters, and there are kids in there, you just got to go. You have to. But and there's also there's the skin deep similarities of the kid who was alienated, who was picked on, who had the broken or the families, they had the access to the guns in kind of a red area, who was wearing all black, who had the army boots, who was putting out warnings. There's a lot of similarities. But what really freaked me out was I thought that we had learned that you how to deal with this. Mm. And there's no way to deal with it once it's going. But the first thing is absolute immediate movement. And why they had to wait for this heroic man from the Customs and Border Patrol to rush in there and finish it, it's just beyond me.
We do still have those overhead like helicopter shots from Columbine. Do you know what I'm talking about? Of the students just fleeing the school.
Footage later of the children running out.
Yes, and it is harrowing. But this raw, shaky cell phone footage from outside the school as these parents are learning what's happening and realizing that their children may not be coming home, but trying desperately to prevent that from being the case. It's some of the worst footage I have ever seen in my life. It is horrific. And Chris, what stands out to me, and it stands out to me every single time, is that there were warning signs aplenty. not isolated signs here or there that maybe people could brush aside. These were warning signs aplenty once again. And the same is very much true of what happened just a couple of weeks ago in Buffalo. The same is very much true of Parkland. It is time and time and again, social media has enabled people who are about to commit these types of atrocities to broadcast it. And either nobody takes them seriously enough, they've fallen off the police's radars, their families are not sufficiently aware. I mean, it just, there's no basically safety net to catch these people before they do what they say or indicate they're going to do.
Yeah, social media has allowed us to find all these clues as detectives afterwards, things that were overlooked and things that were ignored. And social media also allows, in some ways, to kind of feed this alienation that these people are feeling. I mean, Columbine was like that first mass shooting in modern American history that kicked off a whole wave of copycats. And as Mark Hemingway, our book editor, pointed out, the lethality of widely available firearms has not changed
right
in the last 20 years, 25 years at all. So right. What has changed? And that's why, like, listen, when you're the guys like Beto who like want to run down there and make a political scene about it, I'm like, sure, okay. I actually, when I hear someone tell me, like, broadly in the news media, now is not the time. I'm like, what are you talking about? Let's talk about it now. That press conference was a disaster when he went into the actual victims were there and the police briefing. That was actually not the time. But what upset me the most and made me most annoyed about is how stupid and disingenuous and not thoughtful it is. There, obviously, everyone in this country is aware that something is wrong. Something is getting worse. There's an alienation here. These are fruits of a rotten and broken culture that we're seeing. But what has changed in the last 25 years? Because certainly you cannot tell me that it's been guns, but it has been mass media.
Yep.
It's been internet.
Social media.
I mean, this wasn't around in the days of Columbine, but it is around. It's been around now for the last decade or more, 15, 16 years, where the teasing never ends. The alienation never ends. You're not just going home and crying about the party you didn't get invited to in your class. These kids they've got something in their pocket that's buzzing them with harassment or like a life they don't have or something else. And even more than just that, there are dark corners of the internet that these kids are able to access that will feed that kind of thinking. I mean, if you're someone who doesn't think the Holocaust happened, you can go to 4chan. If you're someone who thinks the Holocaust did happen, it should happen again, you can go to 8chan. Like, there's all these different crazy different nooks that people feed off of each other, and that isolation is reinforced that leads to like a radicalization. So I'm looking at the sickness in our culture. And social media is popping out, mass media. And another problem that we're dealing with all this and how we talk about it and the policy and the Democrats versus Republicans and Joe Biden going down there, Barack Obama just for some reason plugging St. Floyd George into this conversation.
So I couldn't believe that to do with it. What basically paraphrase it for people.
He said that while we grieve over this mass murder, let's not forget that 2 years ago, George Floyd was killed. It's like, how could I forget? There was a golden casket on TV for 3 weeks. Like, there were riots across all of America for months. How could I forget?
It is just robotic and empty political posturing.
Yeah. And it reinforces, but it's not just him. It's also Governor Abbott of Texas. Like, it's also CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. We completely lack the language to talk about this because we're super afraid of the serious implications of it. It's not just AR and trigger guards and suppressors and magazine. It's a rot in our culture. It's spiritual problems. It's demonic. It's true evil. It's an immoral society. It's once again a kid coming from a broken family. Once again, social alienation. Once again, like, just complete and total separation from the good life that is what we know and have known since Exodus, man and the woman raising a child. Like, that is the healthy way to do this. And it's weird. It's kind of narcissism mixed with nihilism. And both Republicans, Democrats, and particularly corporate media just completely lack the thought, I think, the brain, the introspection, and even the language to even remotely begin to deal with this. So we just go back to magazine lengths and I mean, with the Washington Post just, or USA Today, I can't remember which one, just saying earlier today that the AR is based on Nazi weaponry, which is just completely historically false. It's not true at all. They don't know how to actually deal with what's going on right now. And neither really do I, but they can't even begin to identify what's wrong.
Right. So you latch on to very easy solutions that seem as though they'll, you know, mitigate risk, et cetera, but really they won't. And so we get stuck in this incredibly superficial back and forth because we're all leaning into what's easy. And I say this, I see the same thing with social media posts. And we've all, over the course of the last several days, seen people that we love and respect write ridiculous things on social media. And I think that in both directions, just opportunistic or whatever it is. And as I try to, when these things happen, ground myself and say, literally nobody wants dead kids. Nobody wants to see this happen. So what is motivating this vapid post? And I think it's because it's that sensation of having taken action, but it's so easy. And so you, that impulse we all have to just belch out our emotion when something happens, you see this happening on TV, you want to talk to somebody, you want to call somebody up, and social media makes that visceral reaction. It turns it into a post. It turns it into something you publish rather than
substitute,
an exclamation. Right.
It's a total substitute for actual moral action. And people feel, you know, the amount of people I knew who posted black squares for Black Lives Matter, Instagram blockout, who didn't even believe the stuff. Maybe it was pressure.
Yeah.
And folks just go on there and they say things and then that is it. And it's really cheap activism. The only people who actually believe it are American corporations, which like run in total fear of left-wing social media posts.
Right.
But it is totally fake. And like you said, I mean, between the politics, between the regulation, which no one can ever really point towards the actual regulation that would solve something like this. You combine all of that stuff and you've got nothing. It's completely vapid. It's just skin deep, just talking like you need to talk. And I kind of understand it. I mean, in some ways, if you feel like you need to do something, it's kind of easier. It's certainly difficult I mean, 24-hour news programs, which, you know, also kind of coincide at the beginning of these massacres. You watch it, it's been days of speculation and days of people expressing remorse and sadness. Almost absolutely zero facts. We were talking about this with the Ukraine war. You could watch CNN all day at the beginning of the Ukraine war, and you would feel sad, and you would feel happy, and you would weep, and you would get angry, and then you would cheer. And it was just a bunch of BuzzFeed-esque emotions with absolutely zero facts behind it. You watch CNN, you probably thought that, like, Ukraine's about to win this war. Russia's about to lose. You get no facts. You just get a bunch of emotions from it. You'd have to really dig in to get any kind of facts. People don't really want to dig into this sort of stuff.
All right, think about this. Many of us spend more time every day in our office chair than in our cars or in our beds. That's why it's so important to invest in the right chair so that you're spending those hours with the right level of support and comfort so that you can get the most productivity out of your day. When you think about it, we do spend so much time worrying about our mattresses and our cars and not our chairs. But X-Chair has made my time at my desk not only more productive, but it's honestly my favorite place to sit for any reason. So not only does X-Chair's patented dynamic variable lumbar or DVL offer the ultimate customized support, but my X-Chair can even give me a massage or heat up or cool down. And now, thanks to X-Chair's new FS360 armrests, I can even adjust my armrests to the perfect position. Now, all these unique X-Chair features help the hours at my desk fly by in complete comfort. And that's why I love my X-Chair. Go to xchairfederalist.com now. That's the letter X, Chair, FederalistCom, or call 1-844-4X-CHAIR for $100 off your order. X-Chair has a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort, and you can finance your purchase for as little as $30 a month. xchairfederalist.com. But that's the problem. It's like we used to have these conversations in our communities. And so here's something really interesting. the one of the messages the shooter sent before going on the rampage, or maybe it was like shortly after he had shot his grandma, it was sometime before he entered the school, was to a girl he had been talking to online in Germany. So these conversations, not just in which we are revealing our desires to do something horrific, or even just more mundane emotions or thoughts, whatever it is, those conversations are happening globally. But so too our sort of reactions as a community, as the American community, as the Texas community, as the community that was directly affected by this. You post something online, and unless you're ultra private and have only like five friends, that's going everywhere. It's going all over the state, all over the country, and then it's going all over the world. And then we're having these conversations. The Prime Minister of New Zealand is weighing in. We're having these conversations with people we do not know. We have no accountability to whatsoever. They are on another side of the globe. They are a digital avatar in our mind as we're sort of debating whether or not to weigh in on what they said. And our conversations are completely hampering our ability to do anything, whatever it is, whether it has to do with security, whether it has to do with reasonable gun regulation, whatever it is, we can't do it because we cannot have these conversations in the way humans were meant to.
It's like Tower of Babel.
Yes, it is. It's exactly.
We've created this thing that this monstrosity that allows all humans all over the planet to communicate, no matter what your language is, all of us. And we thought, oh, we're just going to build a great society. You know, we're gonna be like gods. If you talk to some of these Silicon Valley people, we're going to have human peace and flourishing in an age of great enlightenment. And actually, what God sends you is chaos and confusion. And even if I can talk to somebody in Japan and they can translate it, I mean, in the end of the Tower of Babel, people were speaking to each other and couldn't understand each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel that way when I talk to some relatives of mine who are freaking out, like, well, why are guns legal? And there's no way. We speak the same language. We've grown up together. I've been working on building this Tower of Babel with my, you know, for our entire lives. And suddenly we turn to each other and there's nothing we can say that the other person can understand.
Right.
And that's part of this disaster we have in modern culture.
100%.
And I think it feeds itself, and the beast keeps on getting bigger.
So it's Tower of Babel, exactly, and then with another layer of, and that is the layer of distance and anonymity in so many cases. And I don't want to complicate the obvious parallel, but yes, it's exactly the problem of the Tower of Babel, except it is exacerbated by the fact that we are
at least they were in the same room.
They were in the same tower, yeah. And so in a sense it's exactly the same, but it's totally different because we are in this uncharted territory where we can have those conversations past each other, but on a digital level and in the digital space. And I really don't know, this is part of the conversation we have about like cancel culture. An example I always go back to is, I think it was Katie Herzog who reported this in Barry Weiss's Substack, that there are emergency rooms. People have wanted to take police out of them for the sake of social justice, but the police have routinely saved lives by being in emergency rooms because gang members come back to finish the job. Whatever it is. But because we're in this conversation about social justice, and we're talking past each other in this very Tower of Babel sense, we cannot even have reasonable policies anymore because we can't talk about the problem anymore.
Yeah, I think it's driven our politics a little nutty. And I'm gonna pick on the left here for a minute, even though we're not supposed to be partisan. I'm not talking about Democrats or Republicans, but the left in that. We also have this thing, a friend of mine who just casually watches politics, he doesn't do it for a living, he's in banking security, texted me and said, I'm not following this. I thought last week it was, we need to kill babies, mm-hmm. that abortion is fine, the women, like, I will eat my fetus, all this kind of crazy stuff we saw in the Supreme Court, and senators going out there and screaming, you know, this is my body, my choice. And then this week it's whiplash where it's, we must protect precious children, which of course we should.
Yeah.
But it's such a weird messaging problem. Right? One minute it's, we need cops off of our streets. Like that crazy Barack Obama tweet, thanking America for the activism, the anti-police activism of the last 2 years. And then we have a turn around, we have a school shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to stop that if not police? Eventually, actually, strangely enough, to not really fit any narratives that they like, turns out to be an elite member of the Border Patrol who took a shot to the head that grazed his hat. It's a wild picture you should look at if you're near your computer screens. Now, these narratives, it's back and forth, kind of insanity in this left-wing narrative. And, you know, what's kind of stupid about the whole thing is I was talking to a bunch of senior Senate and House staff before I came over here, and I said, well, it doesn't seem like there's really any appetite for gun regulation. I mean, in previous shootings, remember after Sandy Hook, that awful massacre by that coward, you saw Pat Toomey and other members, you saw the Tea Party kind of split. All the people who come in 2010 who were all together on spending and this and that, suddenly started to crack, depending on what state they were in. And meetings I used to go to, people stopped trusting each other because Republicans split. And I think the vitriol and the rhetoric has gotten so vicious. Republicans have been called Nazis and baby haters, and Democrats have been called baby killers, and everyone have been going back and forth so viciously that I don't think there's any room for any kind of compromise. So I asked them if they agreed with that, and they actually told me that they think that there are Republicans who would compromise on red flag laws and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
He said you could easily peel off 10 senators to try and pass some kind of red flag thing, but didn't think actually the Democrats were willing to meet on that.
I think that's true.
And that's just like this. Well, then what are we doing?
Right. That's a really good point. Because we can't. Yeah, that is a really good point. Because it's the problem is even just coming to the table. Because and it's not even. When I'm thinking about this, it's sort of like. It's not even partisan, it's transpartisan in the sense that there's one side of this that's trying to preserve just humanity, like pro-human ways of life. And then there's another side that owns the culture, and that is basically scorched earth and is not rooted, you know, they're also humans. They don't want them or themselves to be shopping at a grocery store in Buffalo or their children to be at a school in Texas. But they don't have any like strong moral foundation. They're rooted in post-modernity. They are anti sort of truth. And it's so easy that you end up only having these conversations about the easiest possible superficial solutions, like tweaks to, you know, what kind of guns are, what kind of, like you were saying, magazines, whatever it is.
Like, they laugh like, it's enough of your thoughts and prayers. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do? Turn to God?
That's okay. A great point.
What are you going to do? We're going to turn to government. Okay. So what's the government going to do to stop this? What's the evil?
That's a great point. Because you see Republicans doing that too, doing the same, like thoughts and prayers aren't enough. And so literally nobody is saying that they are.
But I think, I do think it's kind of stupid because I just think that prayer and spirituality and bringing morality back to our country is actually essential. Yeah. And have a people in the face of tragedy. You know, like when you read the book of Judges or you read Exodus and you always kind of wonder, especially when you're younger, like, how could they forget? How could they forget God? How could they forget to pray? Why would they reject it? Don't they know? Like, this has happened again and again and again. And then I used to think, like, how could they be so silly? And now I look around modern society, and it's actually really easy. Mm. It's really easy to lose track of this. It's really easy to say, imagine you're out there in the desert, and Moses is like, hey, I'm gonna go take care of this. And you're like, prayers are not enough. It's like, really? Well, what do you got? What's your plan?
Idols.
Yeah, idols. Baal. That's a favorite of the modern left. But even, I mean, there is a role for government because government is an expression, or government is an expression, law is discovered truth and morality when it's properly understood. Well, we kind of discussed there's no real change in gun laws here. Mm-hmm. There's an age change in Texas fairly recently in the last 2 years to lower the age that you're able to get a handgun, but that wouldn't have affected someone getting a long gun.
Right.
So that's not up. So what is it? And I think it does take a more visionary approach. I mean, I don't know if this is the right solution, but I think he's onto the right path. When you talk to people like J.D. Vance or Josh Hawley, who are looking at the screens, the mass marketization,
pornography,
the pornography. I mean, this coward spent a life alienated, feeling sorry for himself with schools closed due to COVID, increasingly on the internet, surrounded by pornography and nihilism, finding darker channels with which to express himself and his BS. These are serious cancers in our society, and it's difficult to deal with, but it really ought to be dealt with, how they're just absolutely spreading these kinds of toxins through us. And it's a tough conversation to have, but and you know what, it's difficult too. Like, Christopher's been home for 10 days out of the last couple, the last like 6 weeks.
You're referring to yourself in the third person.
Yeah, right. Little boy. From school, because of COVID, ridiculous COVID policies, it's super easy to just take an iPad and just put it in his hands.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And be like, yeah. Okay. Because otherwise, I got news to you.
It'll
when,
work
when
like
you're
magic.
Done working, I'll be done working in 2 hours. Well, prepare to hear that question 1,000 times in the next 2 hours. And it's hard not to get angry and kind of frustrated, but it's just a kid. So I can see like the temptation for parents just to put a screen in. Like, all right, here you go. Or like, don't restrict it. And I also, as a kid, used to play computer games. Remember the temper tantrums I used to throw when I was a teenager? Get out of my room. I'm just trying to, you know, go outside and play. It's tough. But it's really important, and it's a matter of kids' safety. It's a matter of the future of our culture. It's a matter of mental happiness. It's a matter of emotional well-being. We go outside in our health magazines and say, like, in order to promote body positivity and good emotional health, we're like, we're going to put fat chicks on Instagram. It's like, oh, okay. It's from swimsuit edition. I'm like, okay, but maybe there's like a deeper problem here. Maybe it's the screen time. Maybe it's the social media. Maybe it's the fact that your phone's always buzzing, showing you something different.
So I definitely consider my incessant skepticism both a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing in journalism for sure. But as I've watched all of these MyPillow ads over the years, I have just been plagued by the question, are these as good as the commercials say they are? I've always wondered this. And when the fine folks over at MyPillow were kind enough to send me some of their products, I was really pleasantly surprised. These things are great. And right now they're having a BOGO extravaganza. So you can get buy one, get one free price on the MyPillow bed sheets as low as $59.98, the Elegance MyPillows as low as $49.98, and that six-piece towel sets. Those are my favorite. Those are included in the BOGO extravaganza. Also, the Roll and Go Anywhere MyPillows for $29.98 and so much more. Those six-piece towel sets are made with cotton grown here in the United States. Other towels feel good but don't absorb, or they absorb but they don't feel good. Every MyPillow towel is made from proprietary technology that makes them highly absorbent and soft to the touch. I can confirm that. It's absolutely true. Like I said, these are my favorites. They have no lotiony feel either. Every set comes with two bath towels, two hand towels, and two washcloths. So you got everything you need. They're available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they are machine washable and come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a one-year limited warranty. Those Roll and Go Anywhere MyPillows, you can use them on your couch, your recliner, or in your car. They're versatile enough to take on vacation or really anywhere you go. They're also available in multiple colors and patterns and machine washable and dryable for all you parents. That's the most important part. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee as well. So as you can see, it's a buy one, get one extravaganza over at mypillow.com/federalist. Bed sheets and MyPillows are just the tip of the iceberg. Find the full list of BOGO offers by visiting mypillow.com/federalist or call 800-794-8429. Stock up with buy one, get one free savings today and get Mike's book free with any purchase. MyPillow.com/Federalist or call 800-794-8429. MyPillow.com/Federalist. Well, and so this is where this is a good articulation of kind of what I was going for, in that, like, when you are not rooted in anything, if you've built your ideology and your culture's dominant ideology on a house of sand as opposed to a house of stone, it crumbles. And there, the obvious counterpoint to everything we're talking about would be, well, even other Western democracies don't have the same problems with mass shootings that the United States does, and they have similar cultures, etc. And I would say, first of all, we're a much bigger country, and we're obviously different in many ways, but the coarsening is affecting every country. The coarsening of Western culture is certainly affecting every country, and it might be manifesting in different ways now, but the results at the end of the day is going to be the same. And that is not to downplay absolutely anything, but in a broader sort of 30,000 foot view, this is sapping all of us of our humanity, and the same ideology behind that is the ideology that is pushing us into this superficial, facile conversation that will not bring us to solutions.
Yeah, whether it's just stupid body positivity and swimsuit editions, or we walk across the street from our office and the way we solve the mental health crisis and severe drug addiction and crime is we hand out $500 tents from REI to the homeless and say, make yourself, you know, just sit outside. Like, it's all these superficial, let me feel better kind of garbage, and none of them actually solve root problems.
So obesity as health, which is a line that people are actually, like, it's an argument that actually gets made by medical experts. It reminds me of Michael Schellenberger resurfaced a tweet that I had posted back in the winter just last week, and it was in the context of a conversation
just
about...
Just looking through your Twitter?
No, it was relevant to a point he was making about homelessness. I had found in this DCist article that, and this is, again, it's an obvious argument that the left makes, they were saying that in order to protect homeless people from the winter cold, we needed to protect their outdoor encampments. It is an actual argument that an advocate, somebody who spends every day working in theory on behalf of people who find themselves homeless, was making, that these to keep them safe from the cold, we must keep them in the cold. And the argument is, like, so convoluted and backwards that if you're not involved in this and you're not close up, you take a step back and you laugh at it because it's so ridiculous. But their twisted logic is that, you know, it is not worth trying to push people out of the encampments and into housing because it's not practical. It just won't happen. The addictions are too hard to beat. It's just
and the DA is not putting away people who are caught dealing drugs to the homeless.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if you're caught dealing methamphetamines and heroin to homeless mentally ill people, then you know, maybe the penalty should rhyme with meth penalty.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want to deal with it. We just let them back out because it doesn't address the root causes. Same thing with our border. You know, the sad thing is, like, guarantee you, this is going to happen again.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Maybe this year.
That's horrible.
If not this year, the next year. I guess the school year is almost over, thank God. But it's going to happen again. And we are on such a difficult path right now. I think that people on the right, you know, talking about some of the more introspective populist aspects, whether it's Claremont or I mentioned Vance and Holly and others, the more populist right, you know, this is not something that President Trump was ever interested in, but others have been. They're like, obviously, Trump's not interested in this, but there's something wrong and it needs help in the coarsening of our broadcast, of our constant, unending, unceasing media technology society.
100%.
That needs to be addressed. You're not going to be able to just fix, you know, some of the soullessness and despairing aspects that have created, we created with, like, our plastic suburbs and our ugly cities. That's a whole other problem. You can maybe fix the ugly cities, the Make America Beautiful Again act that or order that Trump signed right before leaving office was something that could have done that. Just at least making places beautiful and lifting the mind up. But you see it all around us. There's this great documentary by Roger Scruton on beauty in the BBC that they didn't release on DVD because it got such backlash. But you can find it on YouTube and other places.
Yes, I've watched it.
And he talks about how art over the last century, since World War I in particular, has really started, as opposed to lifting people up or finding beauty in the mundane, or starting with the religious symbols and then finding beauty in just nature, and then finding beauty in the mundane and the human, and then and always inspiring people, has begun to reflect back on us in a way that's ugly, that's disconcerting, art that's designed to make you uncomfortable. And that's completely insane. I mean, and these artists say that this is how we show human suffering for what it is. We're like, okay, well, sure. If you take me to the Vatican and show me the terrifying and dark images of St. Peter being crucified, you look at that and say, there's obvious torment here, there's obvious sadness, but it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's uplifting. It shows you God. It shows you something else. Or if you show me the this fields of flowers, it's just something you might pass by, Van Gogh or Monet or someone else putting it together, or a cocktail party. It brings us out of it. And same thing with architecture. And nowadays, we don't have that. We've got extremely ugly art that's meant to debase and to show the ugliness reflected back at us. We've got ugly buildings. The prettiest buildings, the modern ones that we have, are simply glass made to reflect back on us. This is a cheap cop-out. Our culture and our internet culture is ugly. Pornography is everywhere in advertising. And it's like, you know, it's pretty wild to be able to take the female form, something so beautiful, and just make it so gross, as you see in some of these advertisements that are half pornographic, and just make it based and not in a good way. Like, this is coursing of our culture. I think that's just reflecting back. And honestly, I am criticizing other people for talking about stupid peripheral skin deep issues, but it's not like I've got a straight up solution on how to fix this. Yeah. You certainly can't just fix it with regulation. You have to fix it with promoting beautiful art by being a part of this thing. Or, you know, One friend of mine, Daryl Scott, who did something to try and fix this, him and his brother and other members of his family, his daughter was killed in Columbine. Mm. And he put together a nonprofit afterwards because he found her diary when he finally got up the guts to dig through her belongings. And she'd been writing in school about how, like, people were being bullied, not those kids. She didn't know them, as far as I know. Maybe she did. And she'd been writing different things, and one of her last entries was saying, just show an act of kindness to people, and it will have a chain reaction. You don't know who's maybe going home that day to kill themselves, or maybe, like, was just going to run away from home, or was going to drop out of school, or was going to come back with a gun. And so there's these small acts of kindness that can just change someone's perspective at a time when they're really unstable and dark. So they started this thing where they go out and try to talk to people in school. And, you know, they give a biblical message with secular language. They talk about the things that these lessons of deep morality and love and kindness you find in the Bible, but they don't say, as Christ said this. They just talk about the lessons because they're talking in public schools and they're actually bringing that message in. And they've got a track record of people who come up to them and like turned in guns after they've given speeches and told the story of his daughter. Or have said, I was going to go home and kill myself, but you gave me this. And they've been going to school. So, I mean, there are things that we can do. It's not hopeless. We can't just bow to the whole culture. But we can support things that we want. We can bar our children from watching things that are bad and being a part of it. We can stand up for the true and the beautiful. We can do those random acts of kindness, which can be very difficult. I screamed alone in my car in traffic earlier today. I could see how, like, the modern world can get overwhelming.
I was gonna say, you're the king of road rage.
I mean, literally. I don't spread kindness on the road, but fortunately, I'm old enough now to roll up my windows and keep it to myself.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. As Sarah said, who'd you scream at today when I told her I had an incident? I was like, no one. I was alone in the car. I yelled at the sky.
Yeah.
I wasn't angry at the sky. I was
old
just angry.
Old man yells at cloud.
Old man yells at cloud, exactly.
So, just to touch on what you said, I think we saw something happen in art that ultimately happened in our more immediately in our politics, which was the postmodern, like, whether something is art is different than whether it's beautiful, and that's different than whether it's good. And so I think we saw some very provocative art that was not beautiful, and we were told by academia, and this is in the 20th century and into where we are now, that it is beautiful. And so the difference between that, not only is it art, but that it is beautiful.
It's art because I say it is.
Art is inherently beautiful. And this is, it was obviously based on this questioning, this, you know, if God is dead, our entire system of Western morality is dead. There are many versions of truth, infinite versions of truth. There is no central truth. And when that, you know, first started in this sort of high art world, in elite culture, it then became downstream and is now in all of our culture, to the point where you have, you know, rural high schools where the governing philosophy says that to advance women's sports, you must let men compete in them, right? Like, it is just completely backwards, and it doesn't matter anymore whether you're at a cocktail party on the Upper East Side for a new collection, by an elite artist, or if you're in, suburban Kansas City, it's everywhere and it's dominant.
This is something that people need to recognize. I think this Texas is awful, awful incident. This awful, cowardly attack in Texas shows it. There are no magic bubbles in America. Your little hometown is not safe.
Yep.
Small towns in Texas and Kansas and South Dakota and Wyoming, parents might be shocked to find out what's being taught in some of those schools.
Or what's happening on their child's iPhone.
Yeah, you give in their bedroom. Child an iPhone. Well, that child has access to the most vile pornography and scenes of murder and torture immediately.
And they can stumble on it by accident.
It's right at their fingertips. And maybe they're not the kind of person who would seek it out, but people will send it to them, and they'll find it accidentally, even if they're not seeking it out.
Yeah.
I thought it was insane. You see the Asa Hutchinsons and those people in the world. I don't want to go down a critical race theory hole at all.
Well, this is another good example that anti-racism necessitates actual racism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but these people say, well, that's not a problem in my state. I know we don't have that. Or it's like, we wouldn't, I mean, no, actually, whether you're a red state or a blue state, an armed state or an unarmed state, a patriotic state or a nihilist state, evil will come there.
Mm-hmm.
Badness will spread there. And because of this Tower of Babel internet thing that we've created, it's got access to all of you. I mean, this shooter can find a friend in the 15-year-old girl, this coward in Germany, and be communicating with her. I have no idea what they were talking about. Maybe he was just harassing her. But the internet's just made it kind of everywhere. And we need to be on guard. I mean, Satan is real.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's everywhere, and it's not going anywhere anytime soon. And I think, of course, Chris and I would both agree there are practical steps that can be taken to alleviate or to mitigate the risks. I'm working on something right now about what the media can do. An obvious route, the way the media covers these things. End all be all solution, but it's something you can do. We can have different. There are companies that actually help schools monitor every student's social media in various ways to just alert them to any concerning posts. I mean, there's so many different things that can be done here, but
it's just creepy and draconian in itself.
Yeah, but they are students and minors, and there are ways I think you can screen and filter what they're posting publicly. But all that is to say, this is not going anywhere unless we start getting serious. But we're numbing ourselves into this nihilism, as you said, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about this where Ted Cruz is being ridiculed for his idea on more secure doors and how that'd be too complicated. And it's like, well, as one of our colleagues pointed out, confiscating millions and millions and millions of guns and ammunition from law-abiding Americans is significantly more complicated. But the reality is, more complicated than all of that is fixing our culture and our spirituality and getting this country back in a moral place and parenting. All of those things are difficult, but some of those things, like parenting and being a good neighbor, and showing acts of kindness, which, as you know, can be difficult for me from time to time. These things actually do make a huge difference. Appreciation of beauty, getting your kids to church, showing them what's right and wrong. If you see something, say something sort of thing. And I'm from Massachusetts, so you don't snitch. But living in D.C. after a while, if a backpack is abandoned on a subway, you know to tell somebody.
Yeah. Someone stole my scooter yesterday.
That's awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jeez, I'm sorry, Emily.
No, it's fine, but I was like thinking about, I was just like, do I file a police report? It's pretty expensive. I was like, do I file a police report? And as I was thinking through it, I was like, I pay taxes in this city and I feel completely at odds with it politically and culturally in so many ways. But if some kid just took this scooter, if anything, it's probably a cry for help. Like, there's no way the police are going to do anything. But like,
for help. He's probably just going to use it to run into people.
Well, yeah, probably that. It's really fast. But it's, and I'm fine. But it's just like, this is what, like, communities need to be able to perform basic functions, and they need to be accountable to each other, and taxpayers should hold law enforcement responsible, even if it seems impossible, like it's a needle in a haystack type thing. The police have different priorities, et cetera, et cetera. We have to hold each other accountable because this is all based on our own shared interests and our own money and resources and geographic location. And so this is a long-winded way of just, as I was thinking about this stupid thing, stupid small thing yesterday, it made me just want to be a better, I guess, citizen of the city that I live in, even though I would actually rather not live here in the first place, but that's another story.
You know, they just had the DC mayor candidates debate, and they're all talking about different ways to try and solve crime and the murder and all this other stuff that's going on in our city. And I don't think there's a single one of them that I recall who said, well, why don't we lock up criminals?
That's too complicated.
Time traveler from 2019 informs the DC City Council how to govern. Wow, that'd be so weird.
It's much too complicated. Well, on that note, Chris.
A slightly more positive note.
Slightly more positive. Obviously a complicated subject, and appreciate your thoughts and your willingness to talk this through.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at the Federalist. We'll be back soon with more. Until then, be lovers of freedom and anxious for the fray.
I heard the faint voice of reason, and then it faded away.